Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome once again to the Disneyland Resort Podcast. All of us hope you enjoy our unique look behind the scenes at the place where dreams come true. Our podcast will begin momentarily. Thank you.
All ahead, one-third.
All ahead, one-third. Aye, aye.
Stand by to dive.
Diving stations.
Dive. Dive. Take her down easy.
Aye, aye. Trim bow diving planes. 3 degrees down.
Catch her at 10 fathoms.
Welcome to the official Disneyland Resort Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Gohagan. Well, this spring and summer, as part of Year of a Million Dreams, there will be new adventures at the Disneyland Resort, including an all-new high-tech attraction in Tomorrowland and some world-class, specially prepared food and wine experiences throughout Disney's California Adventure and the resort hotels. Now, the new Tomorrowland attraction is Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage, inspired by the original Disneyland Submarine Voyage, which opened in 1959. And it will continue Walt Disney's great vision of fully immersing guests, no pun intended, in unique adventure. The June premiere of the Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage will be one of the highlights of the Year of a Million Dreams here at Disneyland. And for many families, it will bridge the generations. Younger guests will thrill to the new storytelling and special effects, while parents and grandparents may recall the original underwater submarine voyage. Tony Baxter is a Disney Imagineer, but as a boy in Orange County, California, he could hardly wait to be among the first to ride those submarines. Today, we'll talk to him about their history and the creative process that will be bringing them back with a new storyline and state-of-the-art technology. First, though, we'll take a look at how the Disneyland Resort makes diners' dreams come true. Disney's California Food and Wine Weekends takes place April 27th through May 20th. And just like last year, the special dinners, tastings, and classes will attract some of California's leading chefs and winemakers. Now, we'll talk to one of the people who makes Disney's dining a world-class experience, Michael Jordan, manager and chief sommelier of the extraordinary Napa Rose restaurant at Disney's Grand Californian Hotel. Now, did you know that the Napa Rose has more sommeliers than any restaurant in the world? Michael takes us behind the scenes of his record-setting training program and reveals just a few of the dining and learning experiences that are on tap for Disney's California Food and Wine Weekends this spring. Well, I am pleased to be joined by Michael Jordan, the manager and sommelier here at the Napa Rose at Disney's Grand California. So first of all, thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm delighted. Thank you so much for having me here.
Well, tell me, I mean, here we are sitting in this amazing dining establishment right in the middle of the Disneyland Resort. I mean, how does that happen?
Well, we were very lucky, I have to say. You know, it's a beautiful space that it's arts and crafts kind of stretched into the current century. So, you know, it has that green and green Macintosh, you know, kind of feeling. Everything in here is artisan and handcrafted by craftsmen. And you walk into this space and it's warm and comfortable and, you know, flame-toned lighting and handmade wood furnishings, and you just get a warm feeling. But we're in a little oasis right here in the middle of the Disneyland Resort, right next to the California Adventure theme park. In fact, if you watch right there, you can see the folks walking by Grizzly Rapids right there.
Well, now, one of the things, obviously, with the name Napa Rose, wine is important to the restaurant. What can you tell us about the wine here?
Well, we really are known for our wine program, and we're excited to offer such a world-class wine program here. We have always at least 80 different wines by the glass. That's 80 wines by the glass every single day, including some such rare wines that you cannot get your hands on, like William Selyem Pinot Noir, and we always pour Silver Oak Cabernet Sauvignon and Camus Cabernet Sauvignon, and these are wines that are actually pretty rare. Also, a lot of European wines, folks used to think it was only Napa Rose was only going to have Napa Valley wines, but we do have an international list. We have an incredible selection of very old, very exclusive, rare German, French wines, Italian wines, and really pride ourselves on acquiring the most rare, spectacular bottle that you just can't get. We've got it here, and we're excited to serve it to you.
Well, now, also, the wait staff, they also are sommeliers. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, that's very true. We have now 42 of our cast members here in the restaurant, including the entire waitstaff team, several folks in the culinary team, all of the sous chefs, and our chef Andrew Sutton have passed the level 1 exam from the International Court of Master Sommeliers.
Now, in addition to all of your wait staff, as a guest, I have an opportunity through the Sommelier series to learn.
Well, that's going to be really exciting. It's a class that people get to take. It is what we call a hard ticket item, so you pay for it in advance. You book it in advance online at our website for the weekends, and it's held on Saturdays during the day. They're going to be a class of people where I personally and the other lead sommeliers of the resort will actually teach you how to blind taste wine just like a master sommelier. And what is blind tasting wine? I know everyone asks that. Well, we're going to put two white wines and two red wines out there, and we're going to teach you how to tell what kind of wine they are. Is it Chardonnay? Is it Sauvignon Blanc? Is it Riesling? Is it Pinot Noir? Is it Zinfandel? Two whites, two reds. We're going to show you how to use this deductive process to actually figure that out. Not only what varietal the grape is, but the vintage year and where it's from in the world. We can actually teach you how to guess that with some certainty. It's really exciting. And then that leads us to create really exciting programs and festivities like the Food and Wine Weekends that we're about to talk about.
Right. I was going to say, I mean, folks can probably hear there's a lot of activity in the background, but beyond just the regular kind of exciting things happening here at the restaurant, there's some special events coming up as well.
Oh, definitely so. We're really excited about Disney's California Food and Wine Weekends. This will be the second year in a row that we'll be offering this festival, and it is kind of spread out over four weekends in a row. It begins the last weekend of April, and it's held on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 4 weeks in a row. So three weekends in May, one weekend in April. We will bring the greatest winemakers of California and sometimes of the world here to present free complimentary wine seminars with the admission to California Adventure. You know, folks are free to, you know, sit in these seminars, actually taste their wines, listen to the winemaker talk to them. There are chef culinary demonstrations that are complimentary as well, going on all day long. There are great winemaker dinners held on Friday nights in our fabulous restaurant, Steakhouse 55. So four Fridays in a row, there will be a great winemaker dinner. And I think this year, those wineries are going to be Bulleo Vineyards, the Miner family, Dave Miner's coming down, Lavendi, which is an incredible up-and-coming new winery. And we've got some really great wineries. And then also, we have our guest chef dinners here at Napa Rose on Thursday nights, where old friends of Chef Andrew will be coming to join him and cook their specialties here at Napa Rose on the Thursdays during the festival. We will only be serving to about 110 people. They get to come and have a reception with the guest chef for, say, an hour, and then sit down, and that chef will have prepared four courses for them, and I will pair them with wines, and we'll be serving this like a little private party for an incredibly low price. It's so incredibly low, I can't even say it on this podcast because we'll be overwrought with reservations, and we're close to sold out, seriously. But some of the chefs that we're going to have are Donna Scala from Don Giovanni in Napa Valley, and Guy Fieri, who's really exciting right now on the Food Network. You can see him. He's got two great restaurants up in Sonoma, Tex Wasabi's, which is a Texas-style barbecue with sushi bar. Really great combination restaurant. He has another place called Johnny Garlic's, and the guy is just so much fun. Guy Fieri is a good friend, too. And then we have Chef Jamie from KABC Talk Radio. She's a great accomplished chef. And Robert Curry, who is the executive chef from the Auberge du Soleil up in Napa Valley, where our chef Andrew Sutton used to work. He was the executive chef there for 8 years before we stole him away and brought him down here to the Disneyland Resort at Napa Rose.
So it sounds like there's some things that I can plan ahead for, but then there's also some opportunities. If I'm just a park guest and I've shown up, that I still have an opportunity to participate.
Yes, that's a great question. There are what we would call hard ticket items that you would need to book and pay for in advance online, and those would be like the guest chef dinners, the winemaker dinners, and the sommelier series where we will teach you how to blind taste wine like a master sommelier. Those you pay for in advance, but there are many, many free complimentary events that are included with the admission to the park, and these are the winemaker seminars where they will teach and taste you on wines, tell you about the wines they make and the regions they're from. And then also the culinary demos and then lifestyle demos as well that are really interesting and fun. Like, there's some really cool stuff like how to create an amazing picnic from just ordinary things that you might have around your house.
Well, it sounds like whether I'm here for the special events or just any day, it sounds like Napa Rose is always ready for me to come and visit.
Oh, and we hope you do, too, because we're here 7 days a week. We open at 5:30. We're open every night. We serve until 10 p.m., and we have the large Napa Lounge that is very casual, and then we have the restaurant, and there's even the chef's counter. You can request to be seated at the chef's counter and watch the kitchen while they're performing, and it's a great, fun place to eat, and there's always a waiting list for that, so you want to call ahead for that, too. But Napa Rose is open 7 days a week, and we're always here to serve you. We're excited, and boy, we got some great wine, and you know, one of my favorite lines of my favorite movie is, "Drink up, me hearties."
Well, thank you so much, Michael, for taking the time to sit down and chat with us today.
Ah, you're certainly welcome. I hope we see you all soon for dinner.
Now remember, the 2007 Disney's California Food and Wine Weekends takes place April 27th through May 20th. And you can find a full schedule of events at www.disneyscaliforniafoodandwineweekends.com. Next up, it's all about submarines, as we dive into our interview with Disney Imagineer Tony Baxter.
Now, thanks to remarkable advances in marine technology, we can use instruments such as our sonar hydrophones to actually hear the fish talk.
All right, well, we are joined by Tony Baxter, Imagineer. So first of all, Tony, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Here we are right in the middle of one of our submarines. Isn't that cool?
Well, actually, I'll have you tell everybody, where is it we are today?
Well, we're bringing back one of Disneyland's favorites. In fact, this is the first e-attraction that ever opened at Disneyland. It created the e-ticket. This is the Submarine Voyage, and we've rechristened it Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage, and it's going to have a whole new cast of characters on it.
Well, it's kind of exciting. You know, usually we do interviews out and around the park, but we're actually inside one of the submarines, and this is kind of a special submarine.
Yeah, you know, it sounds great in here because we've got a fantastic sound system that's going to accompany the ride that it never had before. I think we had a squawk box, and you heard, "Get ready to dive," you know, and now you're going to be surrounded with and have all these characters from this wonderful story envelop you in a really an amazing, amazing new technology here.
Well, we were talking a little bit earlier, and you actually have quite a unique history with this attraction. Why don't you share that with us?
Well, I go back to the day the ride opened. I was sitting at a friend of mine's house right behind the park over on off of Ball Road. And at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they began a live telecast showing the opening of this ride, the submarines, and the monorail and the Matterhorn. And we knew that we were going the very next day. This day it wasn't open to the public, but the very next day when the subs opened to the public, we came. I got the ticket book, and I noticed something brand new in it, which was the e-ticket. And we ran that morning. We were like 10-year-olds, right over to the entrance's ride, and that was the first e-ticket I ever enjoyed. And we were so hyped for it because the night before we'd been watching that special, and it has about 20 minutes of footage that's on this ride. And the neat thing about that is it just came out on Disney DVD.
Now your history with the attraction actually continues past that as well.
Oh, yeah. I probably fell in love with it on that day when I wrote it that first time. But as soon as I got of age to work here, I spent a couple of years scooping ice cream. And once I was able to transfer out of that, I ended up here in Tomorrowland. And my home base was submarines and Autopia. So here I am, you know, some many, many years later, but back in the old stomping grounds.
Well, now, what's the story behind, you know, obviously everybody knows that at one point submarines kind of went away, and now they're coming back. What can you share with us about that?
Well, there's really a lot of history about this ride. Walt Disney wanted to do something that related to the tremendous motion picture he'd made, which was 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And they had an attraction that you walk through all the movie sets here in Tomorrowland when Disneyland opened. And so when the opportunity to do the submarines came up, his first thought was, let's do a 20,000 Leagues show. But this attraction cost so much money in that day, or even in this day, to tell you the truth, that he had to go out and find sponsorship to help him defray the cost of it. And the people that came through was the company General Dynamics. Now, General Dynamics had built the Nautilus. Here I am giving the spiel. I can still do the original spiel. General Dynamics, builders of the Nautilus, welcomes you aboard. Well, they sponsored the ride, but when they looked at Walt's submarine that was designed for Captain Nemo, they said, no. If we're going to sponsor it, it has to look like America's atomic-powered submarines. So much, I think, to Walt's you know, disappointment. He wasn't able to do a fleet of Nautiluses right away. He did build them later in Florida. So these look pretty much like the original, you know, seven atomic submarine class vehicles. Now, somewhere I think back in the 80s, we decided that, you know, that whole gray Navy look that we had was kind of passe, and it was the time of Jacques Cousteau, and gosh, John Denver was singing these songs about the Calypso and, you know, exploration and all of that. So we decided, looking at why you color things brightly today is for safety and visibility and all of that, and you're not trying to hide from some Cold War, you know, enemy. So most of the boats in underwater exploration today are very brightly colored. So we made a change back in the 80s. This was like probably the last update for the original ride. And when we came back up that year, they were all brightly colored. And that's something we've tried to keep the spirit of in what we've done here with Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage. They're, I think, a little bit more elegantly colored, but they are still bright yellow submarines with a blue trim.
Well, how long of a process was it to plan? I mean, this has got to be a monumental task to bring the subs back.
Well, first of all, we get to the day where they closed. And, you know, in the good old days, the ride was refurbished like every 7 years, and that meant taking the water out, repainting everything, all new foliage and everything. But as it got older and people's tastes kind of changed to more thrilling rides, you know, we spent more time without a rehab, so it kind of self-fulfilled a prophecy that it was getting more and more kind of tired looking, you know, and faded because the things hadn't been replaced. So when we finally went down in 1998, it had been like 15 years since it had had any tender, loving care. And it was a sad day. I remember that day. They had the Navy out to decommission the boats, and we were selling submarine sandwiches in the cafeteria, and all the employees got a badge that said I was there on the day the submarine closed. It all seems like yesterday, but it's already almost 9 years ago that they haven't been operational. So I know I made a vow that day, you know, because I spent the whole day here, and there's Roberta from maintenance was with me, and we rode on the last submarine that night. And it was really sad. As you passed through each of the realms, you went, I'll never go to Atlantis again. I'll never go to the coral reef. And, you know, it's something that had been a part of your life since you were 10 and worked on and all of that. And I've rehabbed it twice, you know, as an Imagineer. Been down here painting and adding things to the old show. So that goodbye day was a day I really set my mind on. I will be here working when we get this thing back in operation. And we had a couple of what seemed to be great opportunities to do that. One was the launch of the motion picture Atlantis. And I thought, aha, here's the perfect thing. There's a big villain, the Leviathan, and there's this whole ancient city at the bottom of the sea. So we built a mock-up here, and we brought all of management in to see the mock-up of Atlantis, and they liked it. Unfortunately, when the movie came out, the public didn't particularly like it. And so we had a great idea for something that really didn't hit anybody's fancy. So back to the drawing boards, and a couple years later, Treasure Planet. And it wasn't about being underwater, but it had a great idea that we thought we could beef up Atlantis and be very techie at the same time. So we're going to give every person at every porthole a joystick, and they could send, like, essentially a big giant claw down into the treasury of Atlantis and try to capture treasure. And at the end of the ride, you'd be given a voucher to claim the treasure that you had found on board. And it seemed like, wow, this is a really interactive thing. And, you know, going on the treasure hunt would be a lot of fun and everything. And a funny thing happened. That movie came out, and it also didn't catch the fancy of the public. So here we were again, sort of dead in the water, so to speak. And then a wonderful thing happened. And it was through Pixar that Finding Nemo came to life. And shall we say, it's been happily ever after ever since.
So that's going back a few years now. When the decision's finally made, this has got to have just been a monumental planning task.
Well, the decision wasn't made that easily. We had all new management then. Matt Wiemat had come into the company, and he had done a lot of really great things getting Disneyland ready for its 50th anniversary. And we knew, you know, he really dug in and got very deep into what made Disneyland work. So he was going to be very careful in whatever he chose to keep that image alive and actually improve on it. And so we knew we were going to have to do a new test. And we went to quite a bit of trouble building a complete scene out here. We dragged one of the boats, which had not moved now for almost 8 years, out into the lagoon. The public went wild. It was all over the internet because you could see the boat. What's going on? We actually relented and hung a sign on it and said, we're Imagineering new creations and whatnot. And that made it on the internet. But in that box, we were able to create one really fantastic scene that was kind of an amalgam of the finale in the volcano and another scene where we meet all the creatures in the coral reef. And we had watched it to the point where we were all really satisfied. We thought it would do the trick with management, but we were all struggling. How are we going to ask them for the money to do this? And I raised my hand and I said, what if we have Crush do it? And we had this great animated Crush that we use over in Turtle Talk. And so we borrowed that animation and brought it over here. And at the end of this amazing demonstration where the volcano went off and we had Squirt and Nemo and Dory and all of that in great conversation, and they were just amazingly realistic and very much underwater. We had Crush come out and says, all right, all you Disneyland dudes, it's time to cough up that check and get this show on the road. And everyone burst out laughing. And when they came up, they said, well, you got us. You got us. I guess we're going to have to do this. And then Matt said, one thing you promised me, you said, we're doing all of this with trickery and magic and everything, but that was really underwater. And we said, no, we did it with magic and trickery. And he had to go down into our special effects area to prove to himself that we really were, because it was so convincing that it was really happening.
Well, as somebody getting excited about experiencing the attraction when it first debuts, I mean, this is not your standard Disneyland attraction in the context of some of the other ones that are out there. I mean, there are a lot of special effects and just a lot of, I mean, I've seen some of the planning that's gone on, just an amazing visual experience. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, first of all, where would you have to go under the water with your family, you know? And I think this is one of the things that really is the essence of Disneyland. You know, I used to say, and one of the reasons I really resisted closing the submarine ride was, if you think about the diversity here, I think that's why Disneyland is so appealing, that you could see, for instance, Abraham Lincoln and Dumbo and go underwater in one place. That's pretty amazing that all of those exist and can be achieved in one day. So taking people into an underwater environment is one of the most alien things you can do on planet Earth, and it's not that accessible. Most people live their whole lives without ever experiencing it. So it was really, you know, paramount that we, if we could do anything, bring something like this back. And so that was the start of it. That was the crucial thing. But the advancement of technology and what people expect due to what they've seen in the theaters is so different from 1955 or 59 when this opened, that we knew we had to find a new way of telling stories on board that lived up to the magic that Pixar's put on the screen. So I think the real challenge, and we had to convince ourselves before we could even embark on this, was could you deliver the same level of magic that people saw in the theaters on a two-dimensional movie screen? Now, we had to make it just as magical in a three-dimensional underwater world and bring those characters to life in with all the same skill and expertise that was done in film. And when we answered that question that, yes, we did, and yes, you could have a story and you could follow the action and the sound and the dialogue that these characters bring to life in this travels with you through the submarine. So it's a very stereophonic, if you want, experience. So you can really follow the characters as they move along. It's truly an amazing thing because you've got a visual show that's running outside the window and an audio show that's running inside the boat. And even the coordination of that was like a major, major accomplishment.
Are there any particular aspects of the attraction that, I mean, obviously the whole thing is just stunning in what's being planned and what's soon to debut here, but are there any, are there one or two objects that you're just particularly proud of that you think are kind of a real home run?
Oh gosh, you put me on the spot. You know, you fall in love with each one of these scenes like it's one of your kids. I think bringing the Pixar characters to life in a new media is amazing. And the fact that it's seamless, you know, you look out there and you cannot tell what is, you know, a real underwater, being and something else that's created through the technologies of today. And it all flows together seamlessly in a way that I wished it would, but you never know if that's going to happen until you see it. So that to me was like, a home run. You know, the rest of it's going to be gravy. From now till opening day is gravy because, you know, we've gotten over that initial hump. There's a couple things in this show that I think are really, you know, I feel good about. There's a couple of throwbacks to the original ride. There's one set that's out of Walt Disney's version of this show that we were able to maintain. And it kind of became a mascot to the crew to think Walt Disney saw that, and it's still there. And at the end of the ride, for people of my generation that grew up with it as a kid, if you look really, really hard and use your imagination, you might see the remnants of the old sea serpent kind of, you know, hidden in the rockwork at the end of the ride. So those of you who are fanatics, pay close attention at the end of the ride and see if you can find him.
Well, Tony, thank you so much for joining us. And I have to admit, this is the first interview I've ever done in a submarine. And it's quite a unique experience. It's great to be sitting here in the sub, looking out the portholes with you and learning about the entire experience, frankly, in this case, from the beginning to the end. So thank you so much again for joining us.
All right. It's been my pleasure.
I think we've been submerged too long. Stand by to surface.
Aye, aye.
Now, I know there are a lot of longtime Disneyland fans who, like Tony, are looking forward to the return of the submarines with a great new storyline and new technology that will have our guests asking, how'd they do that? We'll be updating you on the attraction's progress and talking to other Disney Imagineers in upcoming podcasts. Next month, the Pirates of the Caribbean will be at it again here at Disneyland. You'll have a choice spot along the red carpet as our podcast takes you to the world premiere of Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, with Johnny Depp, Keira Knightley, Orlando Bloom, and a host of others. We'll also witness firsthand the pirate invasion of Tom Sawyer Island in Frontierland. As always, if you've enjoyed the podcast, please feel free to leave some feedback on the iTunes podcast directory. Until next month, I'm your host, Michael Gohagan. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Disneyland Resort Podcast. And don't forget to join us next month as we continue to celebrate the power of dreams during Disney's Year of a Million Dreams.